And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News, with Paul Hill.
The LCSA held its 21st General Synod from December the 9th to the 12th, 2024, in White City, Jabavu, Soweto, during which time the church elected a new bishop, the Reverend Dr. Sibongiseni Elliot Sitoli. In June 2024, Dr. Sitoli was installed as head of Department for Biblical Studies at Lutheran Theological Seminary in Tshwane, Pretoria, South Africa, where he also serves as Student Support Coordinator. He previously served as a part-time lecturer with the seminary for many years. He also served with the Bible Society of South Africa on the revised isiZulu translation of the Bible. Dr. Sitoli holds an STM and a PhD in missiology from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where his doctoral supervisor was the Reverend Dr. Klaus Detlev Schultz. "It is a joy to congratulate Elliot on his recent election," said Dr. Schultz, who also serves as General Secretary of the International Lutheran Council, the ILC. "Elliot and I spent our childhood together in KwaZulu-Natal. I'm very happy for him and pray that God will bless his ministry on behalf of the church in South Africa." Bishop-elect Sitoli succeeds Bishop Madizi Marighello, who did not stand for re-election. A service of installation for Bishop-elect Sitoli is scheduled to take place on February the 23rd in Salem. Among other business during its General Synod, the Lutheran Church in Southern Africa also heard reports and conducted elections for other positions on the LCSA's Church Council. The Right Reverend Bev Mason, a suffragan bishop, has written a letter to her diocese disclosing that she is the second complainant who accused the Right Reverend Dr. John Perambulath of sexual misconduct. Channel 4 News revealed that two women, one of them a bishop, had made allegations, but the identity of this bishop was not made public. Bishop Perambulath resigned, claiming he had been a victim of trial by media. In a pastoral letter to the Diocese of Liverpool, the Right Reverend Mason, who has been absent from ministry since April last year, said, "We'll be aware of the Channel 4 investigation, which has now led to the retirement of the Bishop of Liverpool. Whilst the report did not name the bishop as myself, I can now confirm to you that I am the second complainant." She revealed that in March 2023, she learnt of a complaint against the Bishop of Liverpool. "It is understood that this is a reference to a complaint of sexual assault brought against him during his time as the Bishop of Bradwell in Essex. The bishop said she had spent the past year and a half in pursuit of proper and appropriate ecclesiastical judicial process. The letter said, "A bishop cannot be above the law. A bishop cannot be dealt with differently from a priest. If anything, a bishop must be held to greater scrutiny. This is a biblical imperative." In her letter, the Bishop of Warrington said, "There are many questions that I have as a result of this very difficult experience. These are now being raised and, I trust, will be listened to and engaged with by senior leaders from within the national church." She said she prayed that the ongoing crisis over the church's handling of sexual abuse allegations would prove to be kairos, meaning a decisive moment for the institution. "It is the first time," she had told parishioners and clergy in the Diocese of Liverpool, where she served alongside the Bishop of Liverpool until taking a sudden leave of absence last April, "why she has been on leave." She wrote, "I am only too mindful of the turmoil, shock and bruising that you will be reeling from as a result of these past days, and as you have tried to make sense of this and my long and terrible absence. For my part, I am deeply sorry for my absence and silence. It has been excruciating." The disclosure by Bishop Mason will increase pressure on the Archbishop of York, the very Reverend Stephen Cottrell, who is ultimate responsibility for her diocese. He has been accused by Channel 4 News of knowing about the sexual misconduct allegation against Bishop Perambulath before he was enthroned as Bishop of Liverpool. A spokesman for the Archbishop Cottrell said on Wednesday that he had no role in safeguarding or disciplinary decisions. Bishop Perambulath has always denied any wrongdoing. Last month, he was interviewed voluntarily under caution by police in relation to the earlier allegations of sexual assault, but was not charged because of insufficient evidence. The bishop sent a letter to clergy in the Diocese of Liverpool just after midday last Thursday, telling them that he would be formally stepping down from his post. The letter opened with confirmation that the King had accepted his resignation, saying, "Having sought the permission of His Majesty the King, I have today taken the decision to retire from active ministry." Bishop Perambuleth wrote in his letter, "Earlier this week I was approached by Channel 4 News, who informed me they would be broadcasting a story containing allegations of inappropriate behaviour by me against two different women. Since those allegations were made, I have consistently maintained that I have not done anything wrong and continue to do so. Since the claims were made in 2023, they have been investigated and considered by experts from the National Safeguarding Team and have found them unsubstantiated. The first allegation was also investigated by the police, resulting in no further action. Despite this, media reports have treated me as guilty of all charges and treated these allegations as fact." He added, "This rush to judgment and my trial by media, be that social or broadcast, has made my position untenable due to the impact it will have on the Diocese of Liverpool and the wider church, while we await further reviews and the next steps. I do not wish this story to become a distraction for this incredible diocese and its people, whom it's been an honour and joy to serve. This is not a resignation occasioned by fault or by any admission of liability. Rather, it has become clear that stepping back from my ministry and waiting for the completion of further reviews would mean a long period of uncertainty for the diocese and all who serve in it. I have taken this decision for my own well-being, my family and the best interests of the diocese. The exact date when my role will formally end is not yet determined. There are protocols to observe and I will now be attending to." By stepping down, the bishop has confirmed that he will cease all ministering or leadership responsibilities with immediate effect, meaning the diocese will need to begin the process of recruiting his replacement. The resignation of one of the church's senior bishops comes months after it faced an unprecedented crisis over its handling of safeguarding concerns. On January the 6th, the Right Reverend Justin Welby formally stepped down as Archbishop of Canterbury after an independent investigation found that his failure to act on allegations of child abuse meant the most prolific sexual abuser in the history of the church was never brought to justice. John Smythe, a barrister and Christian youth camp leader, abused up to 130 boys across three countries before his death in Cape Town in 2018. A report led by Keith Makin, a former social services director, concluded last November that Justin Welby held a personal and moral responsibility to pursue concerns raised with him about the serial predator in 2013, whatever the policies at play at the time required. The Church of England's £100 million slavery reparations fund is historically uninformed activism and will divert money from struggling parishes, a new report warns. The Policy Exchange think tank said the Church Commissioner's proposals to make reparations for the slave trade, known as Project Spire, was based on a defective process that embedded activism rather than balance. It warned the plan might set a precedent which could lead other institutions, including the government and royal family, to pay reparations. Last year, the General Synod was told parishioners were withdrawing donations from small parish churches in protest at the fund. Lord Bigger, the leading Anglican vicar and Oxford ethicist who co-authored the report, said the church commissioners, who support the Church of England ministry, had failed to explain why the £100 million reparation fund, which could increase to £1 billion, was necessary. He said, "The British were among the first peoples in the history of the world to abolish both the slave trade and slavery. They went on to do penance for slavery by spending resources of money, ships and lives in suppressing slavery worldwide for a century and a half." Lord Bigger added, "The question of which past wrongs to address and how best to address them is a complicated one that needs a careful answer. Yet nowhere have the church commissioners felt it necessary to give one." The report said funds would end up being diverted from parishes, many of which were short of money. Charles Wide, KC, a lawyer and report co-author, said the decision by the church commissioners was taken without adequate, balanced consideration of their legal or ethical propriety and without due consideration of the legitimate prior claims on the money entrusted to it. It is in parishes that preaching the good Christian gospel and performing pastoral acts of charity most effectively take place, he said in the report. The board's decisions have contributed to an ongoing breakdown of trust between the church's leadership and its grassroots in the parishes, whose dedication, performance of the thankless tasks, and the love of God and their neighbours keep those parishes in being and working. Mr. Wide said the fact that the church was struggling to finalise a legal mechanism to deliver the reparations showed how fraught the plan was. Dr. Alka Segal-Cuthbert, a race scholar and co-author of the report, said the advocates for reparations not only turned the past into another country, but into a morally reprobate country too, adding, "This is neither true or just." Lord Sewell of Sandhurst, the former chair of the Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparities, said the Church of England's embracing of reparations was an embarrassing symbolic gesture, similar to footballers taking the knee after the murder of George Floyd in the United States in 2020. Gareth Mostyn, the chief executive of the Church Commissioners, said the report had factual errors and fundamentally mischaracterizes the repatriation project. He said, "This includes the research carried out by independent professional historians and forensic accountants, which established the fact that our predecessor fund was invested in a slave trading entity. The board of the Church of Governors determined that, as a responsible investor, it is entirely right that we learn from our history and respond appropriately to these shameful findings." Mr. Mostyn said the church commissioners were in discussion with the Charity Commission about the establishment of a new fund for healing, repair and justice. Swedish police said Salwan Mamika, a 38-year-old Iraqi citizen, was killed in an apartment near Stockholm while recording a live online video on TikTok on Wednesday night. Five people have been arrested on suspicion of murder, prosecutors said. Aftonbladet, a Swedish daily newspaper, reported that the killers may have entered the apartment via the building's roof. A police spokesman confirmed that officers have been searching both the inside and the outside of the property. Gabriel Wernstedt, a security service spokesman, said the service cannot say anything about this because it's a police matter, but added, "We have a general close collaboration with the police authority." Mamika made international headlines when he tore up and burnt a Quran outside Stockholm's main mosque in 2023, claiming the holy text was a danger to democratic laws and Swedish and human values. The stunt triggered a diplomatic crisis for Sweden, which was in delicate negotiations with Turkey about joining NATO at the time. The Turkish government described the incident as a terrible act and accused Sweden's government of being complicit in the abuse of religious texts. Mamika was eventually charged with incitement against an ethnic group over the Quran burnings and had been due to hear a verdict and sentencing in his case at 11 a.m. on Thursday. Salwan Najam, an ally of Mamika who was charged over burning the Quran, said he feared that he was next. The hearing has now been postponed until next month. A court spokesman said, "Since it has been confirmed that one of the defendants has died, the sentence must be adjusted to the fact that it is not possible to sentence a deceased person." Swedish media reported that Mamika was living in Stockholm under a temporary residence permit, which was granted because he was judged to be at risk of torture and inhumane treatment if he returned to Iraq. Family was forced to dig up the graves of their mother and father after a church forgot that it had already sold the plot to someone else. The cremated remains of David and Sheila Shaw were buried together in one grave at Sefton Parish Church near Liverpool in 2012, but the church failed to realise that the area had already been reserved by the family of George Bancroft, who was buried next to the plot in October 1977. The remains of Mr. and Mrs. Shaw have now been excavated and reburied after Bancroft's daughter Marilyn, who is terminally ill, asked to be laid to rest beside him. a consistory court in the Diocese of Liverpool heard that the Shores were interred together after no marker or memorial stone was placed on the site to show that it was already reserved. After realising the error, Reverend Ali Chesworth, the church's vicar, contacted Carol Smith and Julie Tighe, their daughters, to inform them that the church wished to exhume and rebury their parents' remains. The sisters were extremely unhappy with the plan, the court heard. In his judgment, Mr. Justice Graham Wood, the Chancellor of the diocese, said, "One of the reasons which may well have grounded their unhappiness was an understanding that despite an assurance provided by the vicar that no steps had been taken to interfere with the grave, they noticed that part of the service had been disturbed and the grave partially dug up. In fact, the evidence from the vicar is that steps had been taken by a specialist grave digger to identify the precise location of the caskets in relation to the surface of the grave." Mr. Justice Wood dismissed a proposal that the Shores and Mrs. Bancroft share the grave, saying it would be an inauspicious legacy for future generations. Having been issued in September 2024, the judgment granted the church permission to conduct the exhumation and reburial after arguing that it was the best solution to the conundrum caused by an egregious mistake. The error here, which on any interpretation is egregious, it should not be allowed to visit a disadvantage on the family which acquired the grave almost 50 years ago in the expectation that they would be able to use the space for subsequent family burials, he said. The spokesman said, "Sefton Parish Church recognises the mistakes made in the past when dealing with the ashes of Mr. and Mrs. Shaw. This was caused through improper administration of the graveyard in the past. We have learnt from this and put a new system in place to make sure this doesn't happen again. We are deeply sorry for this and the upset that this has caused. We have worked with all the relevant authorities to sort this matter out as sensitively as possible. This has involved the proper exhumation and reburial of their remains in the graveyard. We know this has been painful for all involved, but Mr. and Mrs. Shaw's remains have been carefully reburied in a permanent plot where the family can visit their loved ones in peace." And finally, Pastor Jamie had been looking at his personal accounts and announced to his congregation, "I would just like to say that I am set for life, provided I die next Tuesday."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.